regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully, you had a great weekend. You may have been in Knoxville, Tennessee for the Gun Owners of America Leadership Summit. Goals held in Knoxville for the second year in a row. Although I believe next year they're going to be going to Des Moines, Iowa, which is interesting. I'm not sure that Iowa has, well, if it has, it has been a long time since Iowa has hosted a major Second Amendment gathering, but it should be a great event next year. Sounds like this past weekend was fantastic. Today's guest was there in Knoxville. I couldn't make it. Unfortunately, I had a family birthday that I needed to attend, so I couldn't make it down to Knoxville, but hopefully next year. Anyway, Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio. He was on the ground in Knoxville, and join me this morning to talk about some of the conversations, one of the big topics of conversation this past weekend in Knoxville, which was the state of the industry. You know, last week, the National Shooting Sports Foundation reporting the NICS numbers for July. And while the raw number of NICS checks still well over a million, the adjusted NICS numbers, those background checks performed specifically for the transfer of firearms, dropped below 1 million for the first time in like 63 months. That's a big deal. Now, it wasn't much below a million, but still that sort of psychological barrier has been breached. And there are, again, this follows, by the way, a decline of several months, right? So it's not like we went from 2020's high of, I think, what, 2.6 million guns sold, maybe 3.2 in a month, down to 975,000 like that. We've seen this kind of slow decline over the past, you know, few years. But I think a lot of folks, myself included, thought and maybe hoped that the new normal, quote unquote, would still be well over a million guns sold per month. Is this a blip? Will we see these numbers return over 1 million next month? Don't really know. But we could be looking at a situation where sales of less than a million guns a month is the new normal. And that is troubling for the firearms industry and for those of us in the Second Amendment spaces. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, my friend.
Oh, it's good to see you, brother. Thanks for having me on a Monday morning with Mark. I like that.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you. You know, I was hoping that President Trump's press conference about D.C. crime would be completed or at least underway by the time you and I started talking, but I guess it's been delayed a little bit. So we'll keep that for another time. But you were lucky enough to make it down to Knoxville, Tennessee last weekend for the Goals Summit. I unfortunately could not be there. It sounds like it was a great event, great weekend. But you and I were talking before I hit record here, and you know, you had a couple of interesting conversations, it sounds like. You know, we did see this report last week for the first time in what, 63 months, I think it was.
Crazy.
National Shooting Sports Foundation says fewer than 1 million transfers of firearms, right? So that streak has come to an end at 63 months. That's pretty amazing. But it is also concerning, Mark, because I think for a lot of us, we kind of assumed that the new normal, quote unquote, was at least a million guns sold per month. And now that does not appear to be the case. So was this a big topic of conversation over the weekend in Knoxville?
Yeah, it was a huge topic of conversation. And I'm glad we're bringing it up because there was a tremendous amount of concern on the floor of the GOA convention. Now, a couple of things I want to set up for viewers and listeners is the GOA convention, folks, is not the National Rifle Association convention. You know, the NRA convention, as you know, Cam, can fill Mercedes-Benz Stadium 1.5 times. This is a much, much smaller venue. A lot of huge manufacturers were not present. The displays are much, you could be from one corner to the other to use the restroom and back to be on a live interview in 6 minutes, okay?
At the
convention center. There were thousands of people there, but I just want to make sure that we set that stage. It's not that huge event. So you have that allows for great opportunity to sit and talk with the CEOs who are there of the manufacturers. And I had an opportunity to have a great conversation with Justin Moon when I interviewed him for my show from the Patriot Mobile booth. And the biggest topic that we talked about was the firearms industry itself and the health of it. And that NSSF report came up. And you mentioned new normal, right? We thought the new normal was going to be at least a million guns a month. We now have a new normal is what the thought process is now. And it's kind of scary. I think it dropped to, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was down about 25,000 transfers to about 975,000 for the first time, as you mentioned, in a half a decade. Now, we talked about a number of manufacturers who have gone out. I won't name names. Well, one of them that went out was Sky. And Justin's concern was if these companies who we're seeing sales now down across the spectrum within the industry, down about 10 to 15, even higher sometimes with different models, percent, that's of grave concern. Why? Why is that happening? Well, there's a lot going on. But Justin mentioned, as the CEO of Carr, that if these other companies are not well diversified, they're going to have a very difficult time, and we're going to see some more failures along the way. No predictions were made as to who. So my next question was diversified. All right, let's talk about what's well diversified in the firearms industry. If I have a well diversified stock portfolio, that means I have my investments spread out. I'm not going to get really crushed if the market collapses. I've got different stocks in there. But we all know if you've got everything in one basket, if all you own is Eli Lilly over the last 2 weeks, you took a pounding by a couple hundred dollars a share. And if that's your only investment, you got a problem. You're seeing that hit. That's what's happening in this industry right now with some of these, I hate to call them one-hit wonders, where they've got one firearm that's selling, and now all of a sudden it's not, okay, for whatever particular reason. Another dynamic in play is, and I was talking with Paul Markle, student of the gun, about this one, along the lines of diversification. Well, Democrats buying guns. These are some of the fastest growing demographics we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years, Cam. Yeah. You know, I've talked about it. Women, minorities, and a lot of Democrats. Well, a lot of those Democrats are buying guns out of a lot of the same fears we had over the years. Different viewpoint of that fear, but still out of fear. I think I need to have a gun because of what's happening. Are those Democrats going to be like you and I that are now going to start buying guns and building a collection? Likely not. So we see these numbers inflate over time as they buy guns. Then when they have them, they stop buying. And as a result, you know, a lot of us buy multiple guns. I certainly own far more than one gun. You do too. And how many more do you need? Just one more, as the old adage goes, right? Well, there's a lot of people, millions, that don't feel that way. I have my gun. I'm content. I don't like it, but I have it. And then you have economic pressures where we're now seeing the tail end of the Biden inflation, et cetera. Prices are still somewhat high. There's a concern about tariffs, rising prices, et cetera, until we get everything settled down. So you have multiple pressures coming at this industry that really relies and depends on, for the most part, discretionary spending. Boom, 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 and we see where we're at now. It is going to be a rough couple years for this industry, as much as I hate to say that.
Well, I mean, and there are a couple of factors that, you know, that you didn't mention here, right? So we also know that people do tend to buy guns, at least some people buy guns as a response to the belief that more gun control is on the way, right?
Yeah, so the Trump effect, too, is what you're talking about.
And we've seen this in, you know, but even not nationally, I mean, at the state level, right? We've seen this in Oregon with like Measure 114, gun sales shot up. Gun sales really, you know, exploded in Washington state ahead of the new gun control laws that took place, took effect, I think, on July 1st this year. At the national level, though, as you say, right, there's not as much concern, certainly about bills getting through Congress, but there's not as much concern about an anti-gun administration. Right. So people, I think, are breathing a little bit easier. Now, that's good from the perspective of, OK, our rights aren't as directly threatened as they were under the last administration. But, you know, again, there are folks who I think will say, all right, well, I can put off that purchase for the next year, right? Because money is tight. I am worried about, you know, putting food on the table. So I'll hold off on making that gun purchase. Instead of doing it now, maybe I'll wait a year or 6 months, right? The other aspect, too, is that, again, we're seeing good numbers reported from the FBI in terms of violent crime, right? Historic, we're on pace, according to crime analyst Jeff Asher, on pace for perhaps the lowest one-year drop in the homicide rate since we started, you know, recording this data back in 1960. Like, that's fantastic news.
Great news.
But if people feel like, all right, well, you know what, you know, but things are getting better, things are safer. Maybe I don't need that gun. Now, listen, I would say even if we have a historic reduction in violent crime, there's still plenty of violent crime taking place around the country.
You bet.
You do need to be able to protect yourself. But I think that there's that attitude, right, about, OK, well, maybe again, I can push this off. I don't need to make it that purchase right away. So I think there, as you say, there are a number of factors contributing to this. But, you know, again, in terms of weathering the storm, right, diversification is key. And what did Justin talk about in terms of what does that portfolio look like if you're diversifying as a gun company? Does it mean you're getting into accessories? Does it mean you're getting into ammunition? You're getting into optics? What? How do you diversify? Or are you getting are you getting businesses that aren't in the firearms industry sphere, yeah, and using that as a revenue stream?
That's a great question, and we explored a little bit of that, not in as great detail as to what may be individual products that one might add to their portfolio of products. Mm-hmm. But Justin used a personal example. I asked him straight up, what was the worst time you recall? Is this the worst? And he said, no, this is not the worst for me personally. When he lost his patent on the Desert Eagle, for example, and everybody else could come in and he did not have a lot of diversification out there. Okay, that impacted Carr Arms in a great way. But I think we're seeing other manufacturers, not as much a company like Glock, that for whatever reason, the Glock is just a Glock. It's always going to be there. We've, you know, I guess Glock feels very comfortable because you don't see a lot of innovation and a lot of new products coming from Glock all the time. But if you look at a company like SIG, SIG's got a huge portfolio of everything you just mentioned, everything from various calibers of ammo, various accessories, holsters, knives. I mean, anything you can imagine. If you've ever walked up to the 6 Hour Academy, it's all on full display there for you. If you go into Carr's Tommy Gun Warehouse, you see every single product that they have, everything from shirts and hats all the way up to various gun models and variations of those models. You know how many variations there are of the Thompson? You would have never thought that in 1923.
Right.
But today it's made, they've got a polymer version of the Tommy Gun out now that makes it more attractive price-wise, et cetera. So this is the diversification that he's talking about, but it takes a lot of capital to diversify your portfolio like that and your suite of products. And a lot of these companies don't have that financial resource behind them, and they're going to take a hit. There's no doubt about it. We've seen an AR manufacturer go down. And as I mentioned, Sky, we had mentioned a couple of them. So, you know, this new normal, let's face it, 975,000 guns. Let's use that number. That's still a healthy number. But it's an unhealthy number in an industry that has seen this inflation of sales over the past few years. And that's where the Trump effect really comes in, because that's a huge whammy right there. You and I have probably 50 years combined in this industry, studying this, talking about this, writing about it over many, many decades. When you consider what we've seen, the ebb and the flow that we've seen over the years with new administrations, as we discussed with Justin, I said, Justin, you probably had Barack Obama's photo on your shop, you know. Oh, he goes, oh yeah, he was the greatest gun salesman ever, Mark. And he was. I remember walking in gun shops with pictures of Barack Obama, right? Yep. He was a better gun salesman than Clinton was. Clinton was not near as bad on guns, even though he was bad on guns, as Obama was. Mm-hmm. Obama was the worst. Then Biden comes following in after the next Trump administration. We've seen this tide shift and change over the years, and the industry has been able to weather it for the most part. This one feels different because of other pressures, and I'm hearing it from other people. Now, something else that concerns me, you and I've spent a lot of time over the years doing shows, visiting shows. As much as I hate to admit this, and I know I don't look it, you can tell me I don't look it, but my first shot was 2000. Coming up is 2026. That's 26 years of attending SHOT. And I've only missed two. One was COVID and the other was because I had something else going on that I couldn't make it. It was that simple.
Okay.
We've been to a lot of these shows over the years. What happens? You know, the size of the displays at this event were telling to me. Now, the venue was smaller. I don't want to read too much into that.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed it at the National Rifle Association convention as well. Look, when you haven't seen a person over 4 years, you can tell immediately if they've gained weight, lost weight. It's very evident to you from when you saw them last. The NRA convention was a shell of itself. While it was still huge, was a shell of what I remember it being 4 years ago, the last time it was in Atlanta, Georgia. So the displays are shrink. Are these companies going to be able to afford to attend these shows when they're pulling back on their marketing budgets? That's hitting me as Armed American Radio. I depend on this industry to support my show.
Right.
And I'm feeling, so we're all feeling this. It's not a comfortable feeling by any stretch. Okay. But we will get through it. There's no question about it. Guns aren't going anywhere. This will drive new innovation in the industry. Because as you know, you'll eat anything if you're starving. And that's what will happen. We will see some great innovation come out of this.
Absolutely. And I hope as well that we see on the consumer end, I hope we see, you know, a push to get more folks, you know, in the shooting sports, whether it's, and they don't have to, you know, be sponsored. They don't have to go out there and compete every weekend. But, you know, there are so many great, you know, I mean, again, when it comes down to it, the vast majority of people are buying a gun for self-defense, right? We know that. But it's so much fun to go shooting, Mark. And I think that's something that we really need to talk about and you know, do more of promoting the idea of, hey, go out to your range this weekend. You know, that's a good place to take a date. Maybe not a first date, but maybe a second or third date.
Oh, no, it's great for a first date. You'll find out whether there's going to be a second date right off the bat if she even says yes, right? Or he, it's fine, you know.
But again, I mean, just the wide variety of shooting sports, whether it's, you know, IDPA, Cowboy Action Shooting. I love shooting sporting clays. To me, it's like shotgun golf. You know, you go from a hole to hole and you just blast away. I think we need to do a much better job of getting existing gun owners to hit the range more often, but also inviting people to go to the range for the first time.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many experiences I've had, and I'm sure you feel you've had the same thing, where somebody goes, they're a little trepidatious, they've never gone shooting before. Within 10 minutes of them pulling the trigger for the first time, they've got a smile from ear to ear. They're having a great time. And when they're done, it's like, all right, when do we get to go back? Right. Those folks, they're not all going to become gun owners, but a healthy number of them will. And I think that's one way to grow the industry and to at least sustain the industry is to make sure that, you know, the shooting sports are an open and inviting place for people who are new to this, where they can come in and they feel welcome and they walk away with a appreciation and understanding and maybe a desire to own a gun themselves. I think that's a way to help weather the, you know, the downturns as well, to diversify that audience, not just diversify the products.
Another great point you bring up, you know, Marty Daniel and Cindy Daniel are doing amazing work in trying to expand the shooting sports through their Double D Foundation. And people can visit that at DoubleDFoundation.org. I'll just throw that out. I have no vested interest in that, but I've emceed the event for 4 years, the first 4 years of its existence, and help them raise millions of dollars to promote exactly what you're talking about, the shooting sports. Now, I'm not good at competitive shooting. I never have been. Love going to the range, take my son once a week. I've said countless times, I wish I had a dollar for every time I've mentioned this, and it's what you were just talking about. I've never taken someone to the range who said to me afterwards, that sucked, I never want to do that again. Not one time has anybody ever said that to me. Right. I've taken every political stripe. I've taken far left Democrats, some of whom are now gun owners, but they're that one gun owner. They're not going to go out and get involved in the shooting sports, but they're going to practice from time to time, which means they're going to buy ammo from time to time, which increases sales when you multiply that by millions. But you're absolutely correct. The problem that the shooting sports has is it does not get any mainstream coverage at all. You don't see it on television. You don't see competitive shooting results published anywhere. It's like it doesn't even exist, and it happens to be the number one most participated sport in America by numbers of participants. And you would never know that because you're not going to see it on ABC, NBC, so we can CBS or MSDNC or CNN, LOL. They will never cover it, period. You'll see it at the Olympics, you know, maybe from time to time, and that's about it. So if we could raise awareness of that, and the industry is looking at that right now. They know that's going to be, you know, a part of what helps this industry get healthy and remain healthy going into the future. Mm. But I would advise people, check out the DoubleDFoundation.org and support it, because those are the people coming up doing the jobs that you and I are doing behind us. It's so critical, so critical.
It is. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I would say if the mainstream media is shutting us out of coverage, then, you know, we got to look at alternative venues, right? Why are we not streaming some of these events on Twitch, if nothing else, right? Or YouTube. Well, YouTube, again, I mean, part of you, you're into these big tech policies that might make it difficult to promote the shooting sports too, which is a topic for another occasion. But, you know, again, I mean, I think we've got to be using any venue possible to raise awareness. And as you say, this is not an issue that unfortunately is going to resolve itself in an instant. Definitely. This is something I think we're going to be dealing with for many, many months. Hopefully the decline has slowed. I'm curious, did you ask Justin or anybody this weekend like where they thought the bottom might be for this new normal?
Another great question. All I got in response to that was the next 6 months of watching these numbers is going to be tantamount to what we're going to see. That's going to be able to predict it. Do we know? Now, Stephen Gutowski's written a great article over at The Reload about it, if folks want to go over there and check it out. You know, it's hard to make a prediction. We've seen one month of decline. Is it going to decline further? in September for August numbers? I don't know. My gut tells me, based on what I've seen and heard, probably.
Yeah.
And the Trump
effect. Well, and this is typically the slow time of year historically for gun sales.
Yes. So I'm not real optimistic on those numbers going up anytime soon. If we can keep them where they're at right now, I don't think it will be too detrimental to the industry. It's just going to require maybe a reset, you know, somehow. And again, that diversification that Justin was talking about. And you will see new innovation out of it. That's what competition does when everybody's competing for those same hard-earned dollars that are not out there as much. But 6 months, it appeared to be the response I heard from most people. Oh, we're going to have to wait and see what happens. So the next 6 months, or maybe even to the end of the year, will be very, very telling.
All right. Mark Walters, as always, my friend, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Glad you got to make it down to Knoxville. I will see you in Las Vegas. But I'll see you at the Gun Rights Policy Conference before then.
Yes.
Last weekend of September in Salt Lake City, Utah. You can get more information at saf.org, the Second Amendment Foundation. Put it on GRPC. Mark's going to be emceeing that event. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. We would love to see you there. And I'm sure we'll be talking between now and then, Mark.
Yeah, come out, shake our paws, ladies and gentlemen. Cam and I will be together. Alan Gottlieb, we're all going to be there. Come see us September 26th through the 28th in Salt Lake City. And make sure to check out Armed American Radio at armedamericanradio.com. Thank you for having me, brother. I love you.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thank you, man. My thanks to Mark for joining me on the program and looking forward to having him back again soon. I would love to get your thoughts, too, about what you think could be done to grow the numbers, and not necessarily grow the numbers of guns that are sold every month, but at the very least expand that universe of would-be and actual gun buyers. I think it's interesting that the industry is talking about, and at least Justin Carr was talking a lot about, or Justin Moo was talking a lot about, the diversification within the industry itself in terms of the products that they're offering. But, you know, as Mark alluded to, we are seeing more people on the left. We are seeing more women. We are seeing, more racial minorities buy firearms. And that's a good thing. But how do we expand those efforts? How do we reach younger Americans so that we don't have just a graying of gun ownership in this country? What can we do, again, to ensure that there is a not just a robust firearms industry, but a robust number of Americans who are there to support that industry while exercising their fundamental right to keep and bear arms. All right, now let's turn attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Maine involving a man out of South Carolina who was arrested for a bank robbery up north just a couple of days ago. Not his first bank robbery rodeo, according to officials there in South Carolina, who say that this individual has been on their radar and in their custody in the past. A 61-year-old Gene Gindron arrested after he got off a bus in New Hampshire, but accused of a bank robbery in Westbrook, Maine. Authorities say that Gindron robbed the Chase Bank branch there in Westbrook this past week. According to police records, Gindron has a history of bank robberies. He was arrested twice in North Carolina for similar offenses, once in 2014, and again just 4 years ago, in 2021, in both instances accused of fleeing the scene in a stolen vehicle. WGME in Maine reports that police records also indicate that Gindron has a history of arson, having set his ex-girlfriend's house on fire at one point. And his arrest follows the robbery of two Portland banks just days earlier. They haven't said if there's any connection between Gindron and those two banks. But again, you got to wonder, okay, so you got a bank robber. This is now his third accusation of robbing a bank, but his second conviction, apparently, latest coming just 4 years ago in North Carolina. Last time I checked, robbing a bank's a pretty serious crime. So why was he already out of prison? After a second offense of robbing a bank, I'd love to know the plea deal that was offered that got him released in such a short amount of time. We'll see if we can find any more details about Gendron's past. We also have this Armed Citizen story out of the Sunshine State of Florida, Jacksonville, where an angry driver pulled a gun and discovered the other man, his intended victim, also armed. This happened August the 2nd. And unfortunately, the victim in this case was shot by the aggressor. So the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office says it happened broad daylight, about 1:45 in the afternoon on Saturday, August the 2nd. Officers responded to a shooting. They learned that a 25-year-old man who was in the car with his mom and aunt had been involved in a road rage incident with another driver following a near crash. According to the victim in this case, the suspect pulled out a firearm and then waved it at him. The victim then drew his own firearm, which is when the suspect began shooting. The victim returned fire, but the victim was struck by gunfire and subsequently crashed his vehicle. Fortunately, his injuries were not life-threatening. It sounds like his mom and his aunt were okay as well. Sheriff's office says that surveillance camera footage captured images of a silver Volkswagen sedan that was involved in the incident. They were able to get a plate, which led them to a home where the vehicle was found in the suspect's driveway with a, quote, bullet strike to the rear passenger door and a patch on the windshield covering apparent damage. 28-year-old Taylor Strickland, identified as the suspect, he turned himself in last week, has been charged with attempted murder and shooting deadly missiles, which is a crime in Florida. The sheriff's office said at this time the other driver's not facing charges, as evidence indicates he was acting in self-defense, perhaps defense of his mom and his aunt as well. He was, again, injured, but thankfully not life-threatening injuries. Sounds like he is already out of the hospital. You know, I wrote about this at Bearing Arms earlier today, too. I'm glad that this individual was able to protect himself. And stories like this are one reason why I would encourage you to, if you have a firearm with you in the car, make sure that it's accessible to you. But these incidents are, to me, are like, I suppose every defensive gun use, if the aggressor had simply minded their own business, if they had kept going on about their day, if they decided not to act the way they acted, then these defensive gun uses wouldn't have happened. So you can say that about every defensive gun use, right? If it weren't for the perpetrator. But these road rage shootings, to me, are the dumbest defensive gun uses. Not on the part of the armed citizen who's acting in self-defense, but on the part of the aggressor. I don't agree with it, but I guess I can understand the motivation for, I think this person has a lot of money, I want to take what they have. Again, don't agree with it, but I can sort of understand the rationale. If you're driving down the road, somebody cuts you off, let's say somebody's being a complete jackass in traffic. You mutter under your breath. Maybe you shout at them through your closed windows, but you drive away. And within 60 seconds, they're forgotten. They're out of your mind. They're out of your life. You'll never see them again. And instead, Strickland is looking at the possibility of years, if not decades, behind bars. For what? For what? For the dopamine rush that he was going to get by pointing a gun at somebody, thinking he was a big man? Is that worth it? Doesn't seem worth it to me. And by the way, Strickland could have been shot and killed in self-defense because he started shooting at somebody. That's the other thing, right? So not only did he display a firearm, maybe thinking he was going to, you know, be tough, but then when he realized that his intended victim, the guy he was trying to scare, perhaps, had a gun of his own, he shot at him, escalating things even further. When he could have just driven away, none of this would have happened. He'd be free and clear to live his life. Instead, because of one inexplicably stupid decision, his life is forever changed. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Also from Florida, a Publix employee who helped save a woman who said that she had been kidnapped and sexually assaulted. This was Sunday morning in Port St. Lucie, Florida. The police department responded to a Publix and a man taken into custody for questioning. According to police, the kidnapping actually started in Hollywood, Florida. Woman says that a family friend kidnapped her, sexually assaulted her before traveling north in a white van. At some point, they stopped at this Publix. And that's when the woman was able to ask an employee for help. That employee called 911, also helped the woman hide in an office space. Don't have a lot of information about this. Port St. Lucie police say it's an ongoing investigation. They'll provide more updates later today, so hopefully we'll be able to provide you more updates as well. But in the right place, willing and able to do the right thing to help a woman in need by sheltering her from her assailant and informing police. Don't know the name of this Publix employee, but we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow to a Tuesday edition. We'll be talking about some of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. But you don't have to wait until then to find out what's going on with your right to keep and bear arms. Just check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, and we will keep you informed. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP member. Excuse me. Just use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your VIP membership. You'll get exclusive deals with every tier of support, whether it's VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum. But either way, we really do appreciate your support. Thank you very much. Again, use that promo code FIGHT to get 60% off your membership. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.